This is the Todd Wright Toddcast. Thank you so much for listening. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Brandon Legal Group. They are also sponsors of my What Are the Odds webcast. We have a new one up for AFC-NFC Championship Weekend. You can see my webcast at theidentitytb.com/videos. All right? It's the Identity Tampa Bay that I work with on my webcast. Brandon Legal Group sponsors What Are the Odds? They sponsor the Todd Wright Toddcast, and they're also huge supporters of Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournaments. The message here is simple. When you are in need of legal assistance, you need not ask what type of law Brandon Legal Group specializes in. If you need help with divorce, call Brandon Legal Group. If you need help with family law, call Brandon Legal Group. If you have any other legal needs, they are a full-service law firm, and they service the greater Tampa Bay area. You can either call for that free consult at 844-4BLG4ME, or, as many people choose to do, the more informal, quicker route is going to their website, brandonlegalgroup.com. Just scan the website. You'll see a box that says request a free consultation. Thank you, Brandon Legal Group. I did a shout out to Mike Lentz of Papa John's of Tampa Bay on the last Todd Wright Toddcast. He and family member were not feeling well as of earlier today, and I'm recording this on Thursday evening, roughly 9 p.m. Eastern time. Mike says he's feeling much better and says I can stop by the Papa John's on West Waters early next week to say hi to him, talk about the upcoming golf tournament, and everything goes on as planned. Mike, just happy you're feeling better. I'm making these Papa John's of Tampa Bay references in the Todd Wright Toddcast specific to you, because you are my relationship with Papa John's of Tampa Bay is secondary to our friendship. So I'm glad you're feeling better, Mike Lentz, and I look forward to seeing you in the store next week. Papa John's of Tampa Bay, Mike Lentz, and Denny Gray, of course, very big supporters of Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournaments for many years. Email is write.todd@yahoo.com, write.todd@yahoo.com. If you have any comment on a Todd Wright Toddcast, any thoughts on a topic for a Todd Wright Toddcast, someone heard me on VSiN earlier this week. That's the Vegas Stats and Information Network out of Las Vegas. I make regular appearances with the great Gil Alexander on the show A Numbers Game, which is a morning show out of Las Vegas, out of the South Point. And someone asked me a question, a fantasy golf question on Twitter. I do not answer questions on Twitter. I use Twitter only for promotional information or similar. You are welcome to have a dialogue with me, but we are going to have it privately, one-on-one, and you only have to send me an email. So anything, write.todd@yahoo.com for non-fantasy content. For fantasy content, it's toddwrightfantasyfootball@gmail.com. And I'm sure that the person that asked me that, I'm not going to have those back and forths on social media. No. What we talk about can be handled much more discreetly and much more personally with a simple email. And those are my emails for non-fantasy and fantasy content. Before I get to AFC and NFC Championship, let me talk about something that when it surfaced in the Kansas City-Cleveland game, I thought, here we go again. And I knew it was going to set off Mike Florio at ProFootballTalk.com. Apparently, there are others who believe a bad rule in the NFL is that when an offensive player loses control of the football in the field of play, and the ball goes past the plane of the goal line and then out of the end zone, either the sideline or the back of the end zone, there are a number of people, maybe you're one of them, who don't like that rule. I've never had an issue with it. Never. Never thought twice about it. I tried to look at the other side, that when a player fumbles a ball within the field of play, if the other team does not recover before the ball goes out of bounds, the team that fumbled retains possession. Okay? But the rules are different with the end zones. They are. Any of you know what happens when you're in your own end zone and you fumble a ball out of your own end zone? Anyone know? No, you don't keep the ball. Even if the other team doesn't recover it for a touchdown before it goes out of bounds. And again, I'm giving you a scenario here. A team with possession of the ball within their own end zone fumbles that ball. They fumble it out of the end zone, not through the plane of the goal line, into the field of play, and then out of bounds. They fumble it out of the end zone after clearly having possession. Now you're saying, well, that's never happened. Yeah, I was at a game where it did. Texas A&M, back when they played. Number of years ago, people were so confused that even when the referee made the announcement about the play, the scoreboard operator gave the points to the wrong team. Yeah, there are points on that play. It's a one-point safety. At least it is in college football. A one-point safety. So, based on that, and at least I have a reference that many of you do not, the rules are different when you fumble the ball out of the end zone. In both end zones. Oh, and the one-point safety? Yeah. So, instead of that, you know what a two-point safety is. It's the team that didn't fumble that gets the 1 point. It very rarely happens. Some of you, go ahead and Google Texas A&M one-point safety. It was roughly, I don't know, 15-ish years ago, maybe a little longer than that. The game was at Austin. I don't remember much more than that. It wasn't, I don't believe, in the Vince Young run to the national title game. So anyway, just giving you another example of how rules are different. Look, you get tackled in your own end zone. The rules are different than if you get tackled within the field of play. I still have no problem with the rule. You fumble the ball across the plane of the goal line and it goes out of the end zone. Yeah, that's your bad. That's touchback. Other team gets possession at the 20-yard line. Some say, well, he should get the ball back at the point of the fumble. Or the ball should be placed back at the 20-yard line. No. Rules are different in the end zones. Let's stay with that. And someone on Yahoo, who has been writing for Yahoo, and I think he's just pretty well known, he even looked at both sides of it recently in a very well-constructed article, and he said he's changing his mind on it, that it isn't a bad rule. Then he said, ask me again, though, if it affects my favorite team, as it affected the Cleveland Browns in the game against the Kansas City Chiefs. May I opine what I think is the worst rule in football? Well, these kickoffs to start games that go right through the end zone are just a waste of frickin' time. Can we come up with something else, please? It's the start of the game, and it's the worst play of the game. No other sport has a more meaningless start to the game. I know jump balls are not exciting in basketball, but we have a jump ball. That's it. Game's underway. Immediately, the ball is live and in play, right? 95% of the time, jump ball results in someone gaining possession. Shot clock starts. We're underway. You don't have that with an opening touchback. It's just a waste of time. Baseball, first pitch, in for a strike, misses with a ball, fouled off, ball in play. How about 2000 World Series Game 3? I was at that. Bobby Jones fires first pitch of the game after the Mets won. I'm sorry, Game 4. Mets won Game 3. Mets are down 2-1. They've got Game 4 and Game 5 at Shea. Bobby Jones, first pitch to Derek Jeter. Gone. World Series over. A little more on that. Bobby Jones was quoted after the game saying, "I didn't think he'd swing. I personally asked Derek Jeter at the ESPYs the next time I saw him, told him what Bobby Jones said. Jeter looked at me and said, I'm always swinging." Hockey, we start with a face-off, very similar to a jump ball. Game's underway. We're live. Touchback, we're not live. We got to shuttle players off the field. Why were they even out there? Bring other players on the field. Okay, now the game's going to start. But I'll give you another one. And a number of years ago, I was convinced this was eventually going to go away. Now I'm convinced it's not going away. The kneel down sucks. The kneel down to me, beyond whatever is going on right now with kickoffs and touchbacks to start games, the kneel down to me is one of the worst aspects of football. Oh, it's victory formation. It's the dream to take the snap, take the knee, and let the clock run out. Well, what's the fun in that? You know, arena football had a rule. Arena football had a rule that I think in the last 1 minute of the game, because they had a 1 minute warning, not a 2 minute warning, if an offense did not gain yardage on a play, the clock automatically stopped. It killed the kneel down. Arena football didn't want it. Now, I'll give you that it's not going away in the NFL because they'll say, well, someone could get hurt. How many actual snaps are there in an NFL game? You can have a few more. It's the most exciting time of the game. I talked with Rich McKay about this, who's been on and off the competition committee and involved with the NFL for years. And he brought up that there was some feeling that the kneel down would be taken out. It's a shitty way to end a game. You're sitting there, the opposing defense, you can't stop the clock. They just take a frickin' knee. You can't do that in the NBA. You can't do that in the NHL. You can't do that in baseball. You know, you're up, whatever score is, 3-2. Yeah, we're not even going to pitch to you. We're not going to give you a chance to get a man on base or hit a home run. No, we're not even going to do that. We're just going to let the game end. That is a rule I'd like to see eliminated. Force teams to gain yardage, otherwise the clock stops. No, the other team doesn't need to have a timeout. You got to gain yardage. Something similar to that, where you just can't take a knee and let the clock tick away. The last couple minutes are supposed to be exciting. Let's make them even more exciting. All right, so as we speak, Patrick Mahomes is not yet allowed to do a full practice. So it's Thursday night. He might be allowed to do it Friday. even if he's not allowed to do it come Saturday, he's going to be cleared. He's going to likely play on Sunday. I would be more worried about the toe than I would about going through all these protocols, because the Chiefs are sort of brushing the toe thing off. Ask anyone who's had a bad toe if that doesn't bother them. Now, can Mahomes play through that? Yeah, I think he can, but it might, if it is a problem, affect his mechanics, affect how often he takes off and runs, or a little bit of his mobility. Now, beyond Mahomes, the Chiefs win with great regularity. They get the job done. They haven't been putting opponents away. And I think it's going to catch up with them. I don't know if it's this week, but I do think it could catch up with them. I think a very underappreciated part of the Chiefs defense is Tyrann Mathieu. You know, I give him a lot of credit. He was a very, very hyped player at LSU. Alabama, I believe it was A.J. McCarron, threw the ball right at him in a national title game that I believe was that the 9-6 game or something like that. But I remember Alabama went right at him and they beat him. And I thought, well, here's another loudmouth, not all talk, no back it up. But when it really mattered, there was a guy named Fright Night Freeman on Arizona State who had a lot of shit to talk about before a Rose Bowl against Ohio State and then did nothing. Chase Young talked a lot of shit before the game against Tom Brady and the Bucks and then did nothing. But Mathieu is one of my top defensive players in the National Football League, and he means so much to that Chiefs defense. Makes big plays, I think forces the opposing offense to think twice about what they're going to do, make opposing quarterbacks account for them on every play. The Chiefs have some really good defensive personnel. I think that defense, and let's remember that 2 years ago, they changed coordinators after they lost to Brady and the Patriots, Steve Spagnuolo, working that defense. They've carried a lot of this run of winning, the number one seed, holding off the Browns. They've carried a lot of that burden. Can you do it two more games against an explosive Bills offense and then against Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady? They've been one of, if not the favorite, all year to repeat. It doesn't happen very often. The Mahomes injury was sort of a reminder of that. They're just rotating running backs right now. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is forgotten. He trended downward from the first month of the season. Hill and Kelce are so good. It's tough to take both of them out of the game. My concern about Buffalo is, are you too one-dimensional to beat Spagnuolo, Jones, Honey Badger, and that Chiefs defense? As exciting and as worthy as the Bills are of where they're at, can you do it playing one-dimensional football? I know Allen can run, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about having an actual running back to give you something, to give you some yards on first down, to get you a tough third down where you move the sticks, to give you a play action that actually makes Tyrann Mathieu think for just a moment, or holds a linebacker. that's what I worry about with this game, is whether Buffalo can do that as a one-dimensional offense against a defense like Kansas City. On the Tampa Bay Green Bay side, you know, it's been 10 years since the Packers won the Super Bowl. They've not been back to one since. They've had some real stinker games in January where you sort of come away and say, what the hell was that? It hasn't really followed Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers, based on how he helped push Mike McCarthy out the door when the team quit on McCarthy a couple of years ago, it sort of pointed the finger at Mike McCarthy. Well, I saw it happen again last year in the NFC title game. And for as many times as Aaron Rodgers, and as capable as Aaron Rodgers is, taking a team down the field when it really counts in the fourth quarter, too often over the last 10 years, and often in some big games, I've seen Green Bay just quit. They quit earlier this year against the Bucs. They were up 10-0. Rodgers threw a pick six. They did nothing after that. No adjustments at halftime. Blaine Gabbert played in that game. Yeah, that's how bad it was. The Bucs were really good. Green Bay quit. They're the best team out there the last 10 years that seems to have no fight and no ability to adjust on the fly. If things go real bad, they're done. I'm wondering if they have that stinker game again this year in the NFC title game. You can say they're at home and Aaron Rodgers has never played an NFC title game at home. Okay. Not going to be the same. There were more fans there against the Rams than most people thought. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But I'm just wondering if the Packers have another one of those stinker games, because they had one against the Bucs earlier this year. Bucs getting a lot from their running game, a lot from Fournette against Washington, combination of Fournette and Jones. Bucs wide receivers and Gronk didn't do much against New Orleans. Todd Bowles did come up with something against Sean Payton and a Drew Brees who we can all say now was never the same after he went out. Taysom Hill went in. They couldn't turn the page to Taysom Hill in this game. Had some opportunities early to go up 7-14, didn't take advantage of those. Points off turnovers created by the Bucs. Key plays made allowed the Bucs offense to do enough, primarily on the ground. Brady making some timely passes that got it done to get by New Orleans. I could see a similar scenario here. If Green Bay has that stinker game. I thought the Rams would hang around against the Packers, and they did. And then Rodgers hit that big pass, what was it, to Lazard, who looked like he was almost going to drop another one, and the game was over. But Goff completed a very high percentage of his passes in that game, and the Rams hung around. Green Bay lets the Bucs hang around like that, and Green Bay tends to start fast. Bucs don't. If Green Bay doesn't start fast, good sign for the Bucs. If the Bucs start fast, good sign for the Bucs. It wouldn't surprise me at all, even though Tampa Bay is a 3-point underdog. They were last week. If they get the better of Green Bay in this spot and go on to what would be, what, Tom Brady's 10th appearance in a Super Bowl. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Brandon Legal Group and by Papa John's of Tampa Bay. Glad you're feeling better, Mike Lentz. Again, my email is wright.todd@yahoo.com. If you have fantasy questions, You can always email me at toddwrightfantasyfootball@gmail.com, even if it's a fantasy question that relates to a sport other than football. My Instagram is at toddwright2020, and please check out my webcast where I talk about how I'm going to play the NFC Championship game. I have a ticket on the Packers to win the NFC Championship at 10-1 that I bought on March 1st. So even with all I just said about Bucks, Packers, I have a lot riding on this game, but you can go to my handicapping webcast and you can see how I'm going to play the game there. It's the identitytb.com/videos. You can find it. Also, you can request me on Facebook. I'm simply Todd Wright in Tampa, Florida. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of the Todd Wright Toddcast. Enjoy the weekend.